on true crime movie. Today's movie is Gone Girl. Now, this is based on Gillian Flynn's novel. The movie came out in 2014, and we really liked the book and the movie, so we're going to talk about that today. And I'm just popping some popcorn, Dick's opening the beer, and we're getting ready to get started. We're so glad you're here.
Hi, folks. This is Dick leading off, just for a change. Jill usually does this, but she ceded it to me. So we were batting ideas back and forth, and Jill came up with the idea of doing killer husbands.
Yeah, we're going to do a three-part series on True Crime Brewery of killer husbands. So we thought, why not throw in a movie?
So we're going to do Gone Girl as the untrue crime.
That's right.
And then in the next week or so, we're going to do the stories of Scott Peterson, Drew Peterson, and Charles Stewart, maybe not in that particular order.
Yeah, those are three of the most notorious killer husbands.
Those are pretty, as you say, notorious killer husbands.
That's right.
We hope you enjoy it.
So why don't you go ahead and do the beer, and then I'll start talking about the movie.
So this movie was done in flashbacks. In the present, it's in Missouri.
Right.
So I chose a Missouri beer rather than the flashback New York beer.
Yeah, because New York, we do that a lot, or we will be.
We've done some anyway.
Yes.
And when will I ever get another chance to do a Missouri beer? Probably not.
Probably not that many chances.
So I picked a beer called Saison Brett, which is brewed by Boulevard Brewing Company in Kansas City, Missouri. So this is a very pretty, brilliant gold-colored beer with a huge, fluffy white head and lots of lace. It has a citrus and perfumey aroma and a faint hint of the old proverbial barnyard, that funky stuff. And the taste is pretty amusing. It's got lemon and spice and the kind of funky taste that we like in these beers.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very crisp, refreshing beer, a great one for a nice hot summer day.
Okay.
Try it.
All right, thanks. So Gone Girl is a 2014 psychological thriller directed by David Fincher. It's based on the 2012 novel by Gillian Flynn. He also was the director of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo in 2011, which I thought was a pretty good movie.
The U.S. version?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So it stars Ben Affleck and Rosamund Pike. It's set in New York City and Missouri. It earned $368 million at the box office.
Popular movie.
Yes, it was the highest grossing film by David Fincher. Now, Rosamund Pike's performance was critically praised, which is funny because in Unfaithful, it was the woman as well, Diane Lane, who was praised. Now, she did receive an Academy Award nomination for Best Actress, and Gillian Flynn, the author, she won the Critics' Choice Award for her screenplay adaptation of her novel.
Well, I would only say that it's easy for the women to be singled out for praise, given the leading male roles that they were up against, Richard Gere and Ben Affleck.
Oh, okay. Well, I would also
say... Was that too catty?
No, but, you know, it wasn't very nice. But I would also say that these movies were movies that allowed the female role to shine. It was kind of based on that.
Yes.
So the cast, we said Ben Affleck, of course, he plays Nick Dunn. And then Rosamund Pike, she plays his wife, Amy Dunn. We have Neil Patrick Harris, who plays Desi Collings. He's Amy's obsessive ex-boyfriend. And Carrie Coon, whom I love, plays Margot Dunn, Nick's twin sister.
We love her.
We love her.
Just from watching...
The Leftovers.
The Leftovers.
She's Kevin's girlfriend.
I was blocking it.
Nora Durst.
Yep.
Love her. But we'll try and set aside that.
Okay.
Kim Dickens, she plays Detective Rhonda Boney.
She was excellent.
Yep.
I loved her.
She was good, too. And Patrick Fugit, of Outcast fame, he played Officer James Gilpin.
Yeah, he just kind of stood around most of the time.
Yeah, he didn't have a big role, but he was in it a lot. He was kind of her sidekick.
Showed his face a lot, yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, Missy Pyle, she played Ellen Abbott, who was the cable TV host that was very Nancy Grace-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Tyler Perry played Tanner Bolt, the big-time lawyer
the
that became
lawyer.
Nick's lawyer.
That's right.
Yep, so...
Good role for him, too.
Yes. So I'm going to say that you probably really liked this movie. I mean, I already know you liked it anyway, but tell us what you thought about it in general, why don't you?
Well, that won't be very long. I really enjoyed the book. It was a real page-turner.
It was, yes.
And I breezed through that pretty quickly. It was just a wonderfully written book, or I thought it was. And I liked the movie, too. I thought it was pretty true to the book. Minor exceptions, but nothing worth mentioning. My biggest gripe is I just don't like Ben Affleck.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't think he's much of an actor. So that took a little off for me. And that's purely personal thing. It probably doesn't mean anything.
Well, maybe not. I don't know if he's the greatest actor in the world, but I just might share your opinion a little bit on him.
Okay.
Yeah. So I thought it was great, too. I too, thought the book was excellent. She's actually written 3 novels, I believe, that I've read that were excellent. Dark Places, Gone Girl, and, oh, gee, now I'm not going to be able to think of the other one. But there was another one that was really good.
There was.
Yeah. So she's a great author, and I was really happy that she wrote the screenplay. I'd say the movie was good because she did that. I think that has a big part in it.
Yeah, I think that plays a role. I'm glad she did the screenplay.
Yep. Now, let's do a little trivia. For example, I have some trivia on Rosamund Pike. Now, she said she would return for a sequel, but she said only if Gillian Flynn again wrote the screenplay. So I'm on board with that.
Well, God, generally I hate sequels anyway. They're never as good as the original.
That's usually true,
with the exception of The Godfather. But there hasn't been a book sequel. So,
no, it would have to be
so different. They're going to do a movie sequel without a book sequel.
Well, maybe they won't. She was open to it, and in 2015, Gillian Flynn said she's open to the idea. So
yeah,
it's a possibility.
Nothing's happened. Good.
Well, yeah, I would say they do the sequel, it's not going to be as good, no matter what. So why even do it? Why not just do a whole different movie?
And I'm trying to imagine. I guess the sequel would be what happens between Nick and Amy afterwards.
I guess, yeah.
Do they stay married or not? I think he's going to divorce her, right?
That's not what we were left with at the end. At the end, we were left with he's staying with her because she's having his child.
Right, but he was going to divorce her.
He wanted to divorce her. That's what started the whole thing, really.
And I think he's worried that she might kill him because she's unhinged enough.
Absolutely. Wouldn't you be?
Yeah. I would sleep with my door locked.
Yes. Well, that's hard to do when you're sharing a home with someone, but right, yeah. So, what else have you got for trivia? You've got some things there in front of you.
I've got a couple other things.
Okay.
So, besides Rosamund Pike, who got the part, they considered Jessica Chastain and Reese Witherspoon.
I don't really think either of them would be good.
I'm liking the choice that they made.
I am too.
And then this might be even more laughable. Seth Rogen and Ryan Reynolds were considered for the role of Nick. Now, there's no way on earth I can comprehend Seth Rogen playing Nick.
Me either, no.
Maybe Ryan Reynolds,
yeah.
And here's the one that's most interesting.
Yeah.
Joe Hamm was asked to play Nick.
John Hamm.
John Hamm, not Joe. John Hamm.
Yes.
And he, I think, really wanted to, but he couldn't fit it into his Mad Men schedule, so he backed out.
He might have been good. He's a little on the older side, maybe. Isn't he older than Ben Affleck?
He is older, but he's got that suave, urban mystique.
Yeah, I think that Nick is supposed to be more like your generic average guy, and I think John Hamm is more complex. I don't know if Nick is supposed to be as complex a character as John Hamm would make him.
Well, here's a guy who's lost his job.
Yes.
His, I think, fairly high-paying job.
Probably, yeah. He was a writer.
So they don't have money. Her parents have raided the trust fund, so she doesn't have money. And she loses the little job she has. And then they got to move back to Indiana to care for his ailing mother.
Missouri. Yes.
What did I say?
Indiana.
Okay.
I don't know where you got that.
I think they're close to each other.
Okay.
Maybe that's it.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's kind of a tough thing.
Well, I'm sure it's tough. I'm not saying it's not tough at all.
I think I would want Nick to be a little more complex with that, and I didn't get that from Ben.
Well, I think it would have changed the movie a bit, and maybe not in a bad way, but I think Nick would have been more complex. I just think with Ben Affleck, we really got the Scott Peterson vibe. We got the kind of handsome, not too complex, kind of lacking in emotional depth kind of guy.
Right.
And I think John Hamm has too much emotional depth.
That could be.
Yeah.
I mean, he's Ben Affleck is playing a guy who's just kind of skating through.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of who Nick is in the book, I thought.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
Funny you should mention Scott Peterson.
Yeah.
Because Ben Affleck researched and studied several men who were accused and convicted of killing their wives. And Affleck said he paid particular attention to the Scott Peterson case. That's interesting.
Well, it is interesting, and I absolutely see a lot of things in common with his performance and Scott Peterson, especially in the interviews with the media.
Right.
He really acted a lot like Scott Peterson did when he was talking to Diane Sawyer in that interview.
The lack of emotion.
Yeah, just kind of the overall detachment. He just seems detached from the whole thing.
That's it.
Which in the movie, he's not a murderer, he's not a psychopath, but, you know, he does have that same quality.
He does.
That makes us doubt him, which is a big part of the movie, is doubting him in the beginning.
You have to be thinking he did it.
Yes. Even more so in the book.
The book for sure.
Yeah.
Because I think it took a little longer to divulge what was actually going on in the book.
Well, to me, it seemed like in the book, and it's been a while since I read it, but it seemed like in the book, we were getting a lot of our information from Nick more than from her.
Right.
And then when we found out Nick was having the affair, he said something like, well, now you're going to hate me, or this is the part where you don't like me anymore or something.
And he's right.
Yeah. So it just seemed more obvious in the book than in the movie. But absolutely, once he had the girlfriend, we really thought he did it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And not only had the girlfriend, but was continuing to see the girlfriend after his wife's disappearance.
At
least for a short time.
What about when he has sex with her in Go's living room?
I know.
Jeez. I mean, that's just sleazy.
Not a good choice.
Although I can see John Hamm doing that, right?
Uh-huh.
Because Don Draper totally would do that.
Don Draper sure would.
Yes. So maybe he would have worked out, actually.
Don Draper did a threesome. What the heck?
Did he? I don't remember that. Not in his house with his wife in bed or anything.
Yes.
I don't remember that.
You don't?
No. Who did he have a threesome with?
His French-Canadian wife and another woman.
Oh, and the wife was into that?
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot that. That must have been in the 70s when they got to the free love part.
Probably.
Yeah, okay. I don't remember that, but I remember that he was having sex with the upstairs neighbor when his daughter walked in on them.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe. Maybe he would have worked out.
And I have one final bit of trivia.
Okay.
Which I thought was kind of cool. The interior of the Missouri home of Nick and Amy is the same house that was used for Paranormal Activity 2.
Ooh.
Ooh, how's that?
No, Paranormal Activity 2 was the one.
Oh, don't even ask me.
Okay, because I'm a fan. I've watched those, but you don't really know.
I've watched them with you, but they all seem the same to me. So I can't differentiate one from another.
I definitely liked the first two or three of those movies, but you have to be a scary movie fan, I guess.
I guess.
So I think that's a cool piece of trivia.
I thought you'd like that.
Now, another interesting thing is Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails and Atticus Ross produced the score for the movie. Now, Reznor describes the music as soothing sounds with staccato electronic noises resulting in an unnerving, anxiety-involving quality.
He hits it right on the head.
Yeah, the second time.
One of his Nine Inch Nail heads.
Yeah. The second time I watched it recently, because I watched it twice in the last couple of weeks, and the second time I watched it without you, and I really tried to pay attention to it, and totally.
Yeah.
Totally, that's...
There's some creepiness to the music.
It's got some good music.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the two of them won a Grammy for the best score soundtrack for The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, which was another David Fincher movie.
Oh, so they like working together.
Yeah. I do remember the music in The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo being really, like, blowing me away. Especially the beginning when you see the black... What is that black stuff you see in the beginning? I don't know. You see a dragon, you see black stuff, and there's really cool music. Anyway, they did a good job.
Yes.
Yeah. And also, Gone Girl is the feature film debut of Carrie Coon. Our friend Nora Durst from The Leftovers.
That was her first major role.
Yep.
Cool.
Yep. And she's excellent.
She was. She played Margot really well.
She did. I'm kind of in love with her.
In a sisterly way.
Yeah, I admire her a lot. So the story. So the story begins. We have Nick touching Amy's head. We see, just see her head. And he says something like, when I think of my wife, I think of her head. Cracking her skull, looking for the answers, untwirling her brain, all this stuff. which is kind of making us think he's a murderer right there.
Yeah, that's a real passive-aggressive thing, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, he wants to say, what are you thinking, and what have we done to each other? So that's how it kind of leads in. Yeah. So we know that this is kind of a story, a, what would you say, on marriage, some kind of a statement on marriage?
I would say that.
Yeah, what's the
statement? At least their marriage.
What's the statement they're making?
That even though they're married, they are not known to each other.
Ah, okay. Good.
They're ciphers.
Well, especially her, because she is...
Especially her.
She is an enigma.
Absolutely.
Yes. So we begin after that with Nick outside the suburban Missouri house, and they go through and they show the economically challenged town that they've moved back to.
Right.
So when they're in New York, they lose their jobs, it's the recession, and they move back to Missouri.
Yeah, they take a big financial hit.
They do. Like you said, they both lose their jobs, and Amy has this trust fund from her parents who wrote these amazing Amy children's books.
And that's a whole other topic.
Yeah. But she ends up losing a lot of that trust fund because her parents come upon hard times financially as well.
Right.
Right.
And she, Nick wasn't happy with her giving of the money away.
I can kind of see that, but it wasn't really her money.
She said it's their money.
Yes, they earned it.
But still.
Yes.
And the house they live in Missouri, is a pretty nice little house.
Oh, it's more than a nice little house. It's a McMansion, wouldn't you say?
No.
No.
Not
it's a very
big,
nice house.
But it's a nice house.
But it's in an area where that's cheap because there are no jobs. There's nothing going on.
The rest of the town doesn't look like much.
Right. And they're renting the house, and it's probably cheap.
Right.
Because it's probably undergone foreclosure or something. Probably owned by the bank at this point.
And they took what little money Amy had left with things, and she bought him the bar.
Yes. And I don't know, was the sister co-owner of the bar? Or was she just, I think she was a co-owner.
No.
No?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So they own this bar that they call The Bar.
Yeah. Original.
Right. Yeah. Which is very cool. Mm-hmm. Right? Very trendy thing to do. And on this day when it starts, it's Nick and Amy's fifth wedding anniversary. So we see the neighborhood, which is a nice neighborhood, but you can see that there's a lot of empty houses. It's a rundown, economically rundown town.
Yeah, the downtown doesn't have much to offer.
No, it doesn't look like there's a lot going on besides the bar and maybe a couple stores.
Yeah, and even at the bar, you know, I realize the scenes we see in the bar are not prime bar scenes.
Sure.
In terms of business, but the bar never seems to be very busy.
No, I don't think it's doing well.
And
I think
they're not doing well.
I think Amy makes a comment in her diary, which we don't know if it's true or false, because of course a lot of the things in the diary are said to lead the police in a certain direction. But she says something about how the bar is costing her money.
Right.
Not making any money.
It's bleeding money.
Right. So Nick goes to the bar where Margot, his twin sister, is working. And it's like late morning. He goes there.
Yeah.
And they're drinking bourbon and playing board games.
Right.
Right.
Mastermind.
Yeah, do you think that's kind of a comment on the plot of the movie?
I think that could be.
Yeah.
That could be one thing. There's a movie called Mastermind, right?
There is.
So I thought maybe it's an homage to the movie.
I don't remember that movie.
Oh, it's a thriller mystery.
Oh, okay. Maybe. They also play the Game of Life, which I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah.
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 So a neighbor calls Nick at the bar. I guess he's kind of a nosy neighbor. They make some kind of comment about how he's always watching things. And he tells him that the cat's outside and the front door's wide open. So Nick goes back to their house, picks up the cat, goes in the house, right?
Right.
And at this point, they start doing some flashbacks. They show how they meet Cute.
Very cute.
Yep. At a party.
Yep. He had all the lines down, didn't he?
He did. And they had a nice banter, almost kind of like a Aaron Sorkinson type banter.
Yeah, there seemed to be pretty good chemistry between them at the beginning there.
Yes. So we see at this point Amy's writing in her journal about how happy she is, and they're living in New York City. And then she starts to write after that they lose their jobs. She says, do you want to find the weak spots in a marriage? Subtract two jobs, add one recession, and it's very effective, something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
True words, huh?
Yes. So they lose their jobs, and then they end up moving to Missouri to take care of Nick's mom, who has terminal cancer.
Right. And his father has Alzheimer's or something.
Yeah, he's in a nursing
home.
So
he's in a home, so he can't do anything.
Right, right.
So he's helping Margot. He and Margot are taking care of Mom.
Yeah. And according to her journal and the flashbacks that they show, the marriage is really going downhill at that point.
Well, sure. A lot of stress there.
Yeah, Nick's become, and this is her slant on it, so we don't really know how much this was real, but Nick's become lazy, distant, and unfaithful. And when the detective comes in and starts looking at the house, because he comes home, she's not there, the door is wide open, there's some furniture turned over.
Right, there's a glass coffee table that's in smithereens, or the glass is in smithereens.
Right, right.
Something's happened in that house.
Yeah, so the detective, who is Detective Boney, Kim Dickens,
right,
is the actress, yeah. She does a good job. So she finds signs of financial trouble, then they find bumped up health insurance, domestic disputes, and a witness actually tells them that Amy was trying to buy a gun. They go out talking to people. There's that deserted mall. What'd you think of that?
Yeah.
That was cool.
It was. I guess it was kind of a stretch for me, but I guess there could be people hanging out there.
Sure. Why not?
If they're homeless or no place else.
Although you think they'd have security people keeping that from happening, because that could just be a huge mess.
One would, unless they're just abandoning the mall.
Well, I think the mall's abandoned, but I think it's a threat to the community to have a place like that abandoned with people coming and going and using drugs and whatever. You think they'd want to prevent that?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. But there's a guy there who says she came in, she was nervous, she wanted to buy a gun.
Yeah.
So there's another part of her plot. She's very clever.
She
is. Absolutely. And they also have a medical report they find that indicates that Amy's pregnant. So all these things keep piling up to make it look like Nick killed his wife.
Yep.
Right?
Because the pregnancy is something unbeknownst to Nick.
Absolutely. And the home has evidence of a struggle. The police actually find cleaned up blood stains on the floor with a luminol test.
Right.
And suspicions arise that Amy may have been murdered by, and Nick, of course, is the key suspect.
Sure, he's the spouse.
Right. And he's not acting great. He's not acting too concerned. He's kind of casual, like I said, kind of detached.
He didn't perform well there.
No. And then more diary entries by Amy highlight her growing isolation, poor treatment by Nick, saying that she's afraid of Nick and afraid he might kill her, which is really dramatic how she does that.
Right.
And we're seeing flashbacks, so we're believing it. Even though this stuff was probably made up, we figure out later.
Later we do figure that. But, yeah. You know, we're just going with the linear flow of the narrative and thinking Nick did something to her.
Right. So Nick's twin sister hates Amy, but she also begins to get really suspicious of Nick. And it's revealed that Nick's having an affair with one of his community college students because he's teaching English. It's such a cliche, teaching English at the community college.
Right.
And his behavior is interpreted by the media as signs that he just doesn't care and he's a sociopath.
Poor Nick.
Yeah.
So then it's revealed to us that Amy is alive.
Yes.
She's on the run. She planned her disappearance and she's planning to frame Nick for her murder and also to kill herself is the initial plot.
Yeah, I know you don't really believe she was going to kill herself.
Well, I think she's too narcissistic to do that.
Right.
But that's the story.
But if she's really unhappy, she might be crazy enough just to go that far just to get back at him.
Right.
Right. I like the way they present that when she's just driving in the car and she's eating junk food because she doesn't have to be a size 2 anymore. I mean, all of us women can really relate to this part of her.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So Amy's in hiding. She's on the run.
Yes.
And she really hates Nick. She hates him for his infidelity. She hates him for being stuck in bumfuck Missouri.
Yes.
And she hates him for their failing marriage.
And no offense to Missouri. That's Amy's thinking it's bumfuck, not us.
That's right. I'm just paraphrasing Amy.
That's right.
So, and she really goes into detail to frame poor old Nick.
Doesn't she?
I shouldn't say poor old Nick. I mean,
no.
He still acts like a jerk.
He is kind of a jerk. That's part of it, right?
But you know, you do start feeling a little bit for him because of all the details she's going into.
Well, isn't that like the whole amazing part of the whole story is the stuff she does.
The stuff she
does.
I
mean, it wouldn't be the story that it is. That's the main thing that really pulls me in is the meticulous nature of the way she frames him.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Well, one thing was she befriended a pregnant neighbor.
Yeah.
So she could get some of her urine to give the positive pregnancy test.
Yeah, so she has an actual medical record that she's pregnant.
Yeah.
How brilliant.
That's pretty cool. She drained her own blood.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. She actually has a needle into her
vein actually there, draining like started an IV and had blood dripping out.
She has like a Tupperware thing of blood she smears around and then she cleans it up.
But she knows she'll leave a trace.
And she even flings a little bit, so there's a couple spots where they shouldn't be. Yeah.
And then as you've mentioned, you've got the diary entries that portray Nick as a selfish husband, just using Amy for sex, doesn't want kids, distances herself from her, and pushes her into a wall.
Yeah, that's a dramatic part.
Yeah.
And we probably think that didn't really happen, right? That's what I'm thinking.
Probably not.
Although,
the way it's told, you're believing that this happened.
Sure. Yeah, that's right. So she also uses clues in an anniversary treasure hunt to send him and police to places where she's planted more circumstantial evidence. And this is how they come across the diary.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is an anniversary tradition, is that she leaves him clues.
Yeah.
That he has to solve to find the gift.
Yes.
So the fact that she's leaving these clues isn't out of the ordinary because it's their fifth anniversary.
Right. It was expected, but she does it in a way that makes him look guilty.
Oh, yeah. She plays it really well.
For example, her diary is found at Nick's father's house down in the incinerator. What do you call it in a house?
Well, it's like a coal furnace or something.
Yeah, down in the furnace. It's partially burnt, so she just burns it enough, but you can still read it.
Yeah.
And she.
Which was clever.
Yeah, and the clues lead them there.
Mm-hmm.
But that Kim Dickens, Detective Boney, she thinks that's a little hokey. So she's not buying it totally.
Right.
Yeah. Because she thinks that's a little too convenient. Some of these things are just a little too convenient.
Well, we thought that too. I mean, here it is supposedly thrown into a furnace type of thing.
Yeah.
And it just got burned around the edges.
Right. Right.
So
why, she says, why would he do that? And then the Patrick Fugit character. He's buying the whole thing.
Yeah.
One of the best parts that I really loved when he says, well, my wife thinks he's a killer. And she lifts her hands and says, well, if Tiffany says it's so.
Yeah, you know, then it's true.
That's great. Yeah, I like that. So Nick does eventually, he hires this famous attorney, Tanner Bolt. And he goes ahead and he meets with the guy Amy once framed for rape. And she pretty much ruined this guy's life.
You know, Did Nick go after Bolt, or did Bolt go after Nick?
Nick flew wherever Bolt lived, because his sister Margot said, that's the guy you need to hire. He's famous for defending men in these kinds of cases. He was on the fake Nancy Grace show there. He's known for that.
Yeah.
And Margot said, you need to hire him. So he went where Tanner Bolt was, and Tanner Bolt said something like, oh, I've been waiting for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he
sought him out.
They would have sought each other out anyway.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and then he goes to see this Desi Collins, who's the ex, and he's someone that Amy once filed a restraining order against, but Desi's still madly in love with her, and he won't talk to Nick.
Yeah, he doesn't say anything to him. He just closes his door and leaves him.
Yeah, this is the Neil Patrick Harris character.
Yeah.
And he does a good job. He's very meticulous. Kind of annoying, like you almost don't mind that he dies, although it's such a horrendous death, you do feel bad about that.
Yeah, he's a really controlling guy.
Yeah, and the way he brags about stuff when he has her stay in his lake house, and he's bragging about, well, we have this, we have that, we have Roku, we have heated floors, blah, blah, blah.
I'm rich.
Yeah, saying that over and over, like, but then it's kind of sad, like maybe that's the only way he knows how to impress anyone.
Yeah, that's true. So, but before she hooks up with Desi, she's staying at some rural campground.
Yes.
This
is where she's in hiding.
She's kind of chopped her hair and dyed it.
The mousiest brown you could come up with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she befriends a girl in the cabin.
Yep.
Or at the campground.
This is a fun girl. She's got her Daisy Dukes. She's eating the Twizzlers, drinking the Mountain Dew.
She's a good old party girl.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's her boyfriend or someone.
Yeah, it's someone that lives there that she kind of hooks up with, I think.
Yeah.
They become boy kind of friends anyway. Yeah.
So they end up doing things together.
Yeah, the three of them.
The three of them.
Yeah.
And Amy, they're playing mini golf, and Amy makes a hole in one, and when she's bending to pick up the ball, the money belt she's wearing falls out.
Yeah.
Which doesn't go unnoticed by the other two.
No. They just think, wow, megabucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and Amy knows what they know, and she's getting ready to blow the place.
Yeah, I don't think she should have waited. She should have just left whatever shit was there and gone.
Yeah, she's trying to pack what little things she has up and go.
But yeah, too late.
Too late. They take her money.
Yeah.
They beat her up a little bit.
I think they hit her. They hit her once or something, because she was pretending to be a battered woman, and the girl says something like, oh, you've never been hit before. You're full of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also the girl says something funny. She says, you know, you need to be careful because there are people that are a lot worse than us. Like, you're lucky we're just robbing you and
we're
not
just
killing
robbing you. We're not really harming you.
Right. So that was interesting.
So after this happens, and now she's without any money.
Yeah, I mean, totally broke.
Broke.
And of course, she can't use credit cards or anything.
No.
It was all this cash that she was going to. She had a calendar where she was counting things down.
Right.
So she had enough cash to live on, and then she was going to go take pills and drown herself? Was that what she was going to do?
End up in the water someplace.
To make it look like he had thrown her body in the water, so she'd wash up eventually.
Yep.
Yeah.
And she calls Desi.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if that was part of the plan, or she ended up doing that because she had no money and she couldn't get to the rest of the days left.
Oh, I totally think this was plan B.
Okay.
I don't think she was going to go to him. I think she can't stand him.
Right.
But she had no money, and so
she took out a restraining order against him years ago.
So. And he's just creepy.
He is.
He's not attractive. So I think that her plan A was over with, because she didn't want to kill herself right then.
Right.
Which, like you said, maybe she never really wanted to go through with it.
Right. I'm not sure she was ever planning on completing that. But anyway.
So I think this
she didn't
was
have
a new
the money
plan.
To get her to the end of the plan. So she went to the new plan.
This was the new plan, which was vicious. Vicious plan.
Oh, this was diabolical.
Yeah, so he meets her, and she just totally, well, you can tell she's got him under her thumb. He'll do whatever.
He'll do whatever she wants him to do.
Yeah.
So he takes her to his little lake cottage.
Mm-hmm.
Which, talk about a McMansion. That's
a
McMansion.
Wow, this is a real mansion. No Mick about it.
Right.
This is a beautiful lake house.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. So when she's with him, when she sees this interview of Nick, Nick does this interview with a different woman, not the Nancy Grace one, but a different lady. And she sees Nick do that interview, and this is when she seems, Nick kind of knows her better than anyone else, and he's trying to lure her in, get her to return home. And he talks about how he loves her, and she seems convinced with that. So that's when she comes up with the plan. She starts inflicting injuries on herself. She uses the surveillance cameras at Desi's lake house to make it appear that Desi has kidnapped and raped her and abused her.
Yep.
And she seduces Desi, which was really easy.
Very. He's been waiting for that.
And just this vicious murder scene. Oh, my God. Really well done.
Yeah. I mean, she has a box cutter or something.
Box cutter, right? Under the pillow.
Under the pillow.
Yeah. And a little reminiscent of Sharon Stone.
Well, that was a nice pick, but same thing.
Yeah.
Under the pillow.
Under the pillow, yeah.
And
always check under the pillow before you start having any kind of intercourse in a strange bed.
With a woman that's not
with
your
wife.
With a
psychopath. Yeah.
Yeah, with a psychopath.
A very attractive psychopath. Be careful.
Right.
Yeah.
So they're getting it on, and she whips out the box cutter and slashes his throat, and there's blood all over the place.
Yeah. Really, the way that it's filmed is really cool, because you don't really see the actual slitting.
No.
But they're mid-sex, whatever you want to call it, and all of a sudden it's just gushing out of them.
It sure is.
And she is covered in blood.
She's filled with it.
So she kind of crawls away, and I thought for a minute maybe she was kind of disgusted, but then she just kind of looks happy and flings her hair.
Yeah.
Because now her hair is in a nice bob.
Right.
Desi fixed her up, because that's another thing about Desi. He was very superficial. He loved her when she was the size 2, blonde, right. well-made up Amy.
Yep.
He wasn't loving Mousy Amy.
He didn't like Mousy Amy, that's for sure.
No. So that's kind of what made me think, well, fuck him.
mm-hmm.
Little bit. So he's dead. She's covered in blood. And it's just really an amazing scene, I thought.
It is.
Yeah.
And this is while poor old Ben, I mean, he did well in that TV interview.
He did.
But I called him Ben.
That's okay. We know who you mean.
Nick.
Nick.
But the public opinion is really against him.
Well, yeah. Well, when Marco first finds out about the affair, when I think I mentioned earlier about the young girl coming to, he's staying at Margot's house to avoid the media.
Yeah.
And she shows up there late at night after Margot's gone to bed.
And they have sex.
Yeah, they're doing it out in the living room.
And she spends the night.
Yeah, and then he doesn't even have the decency to send her away. They fall asleep in the living room.
Right.
So he sends her away in the morning, and Margot's just, as soon as the girl leaves, she's out there saying, "You motherfucker."
Yeah, how stupid are you?
Yeah, she's so pissed off.
Right.
She's so good.
And the other thing that happened was just before they're doing the big interview on TV, his girlfriend has a press conference.
Oh, right, which was totally Amber Frye-ish.
Yeah, no kidding.
That was so much like that, yeah.
And just says, "Oh, we've had an affair, here's my teacher, blah, blah, blah."
Well, and she's dressed very, you know, a Mennonite is what Amy calls it.
Yeah.
And she's talking about how they had an affair and she's so sorry, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
So she looks innocent and he looks like a total monster.
Yeah, he looks more and more like an asshole.
Yeah. Well, one time before
that. A murdering asshole.
Well, sure. And there's one time before that where they're having one of those vigil things and he's up in a gazebo talking to people and saying, you know, we need to find Amy. Amy's parents are there. They've got the big missing Amy posters. People have buttons. And this is when the pregnant neighbor, whose urine that Amy took, comes yelling at him, "What'd you do to your pregnant wife, Nick?" And this is where everyone finds out that Amy's pregnant. So this really turns people against him.
Right.
And then the girlfriend is just on top of that.
Plus, in that one of those early interviews with the media, he smiled at the wrong time.
Oh, can we talk about that for a minute? Because we did skim over that.
We did.
Yeah, back at the beginning when they had search crews and people were getting together to look for Amy, we had this, he's standing in front of a poster of her, and just to, out of politeness, like who he is, he's leaning in next to her poster for a picture and he gives a grin.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell is he thinking?
Not the right time to do that.
No. And we see Amy when she's hiding out, she sees that and she says, "You fucking asshole."
Right.
It's hilarious.
It is.
And then there's the groupies, the tragedy groupies.
Yeah.
The one who wants to give him a casserole and takes a selfie with him.
Yeah.
And he smiles for that.
Yeah.
Now after that
one. And that gets put on the social media.
It does. I mean, at least he realized after that it was a mistake, but it was too late.
Way too late.
She was keeping that picture and it ended up on the Nancy Grace, whoever that was, the Nancy Grace type ladies show.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those were entertaining parts and they were a lot like Scott Peterson footage that we've seen.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that was interesting. So after she kills Desi, she does return home. And I thought it was a little weird that she drives home. She's covered in blood. She doesn't even wash at all.
Yeah, I know.
She's head to toe in blood, wearing like her negligee or whatever she had.
Right.
She
went from her sex outfit.
Right. And I'm thinking this must be the next day because I think they had sex at night. He came home from work. So did she just take a nap in the blood and then decide?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because she drives there in the daylight and there's media everywhere. She wanted to just really make a big scene of it, I guess.
She did well. Yeah, she drives up. Look, it's Amy.
Yeah, everybody's thrilled. They all love her.
Yeah. And they embrace and he whispers in her ear, "You bitch."
Yeah, that's right. And that's when she's identifying Desi as her kidnapper and her rapist. And
right.
He's dead. But the detective, Kim Dickens, Detective Boney's not really buying it.
No.
She wants to question her.
Yeah, so they have Amy in the hospital.
Yes.
And she's giving an interview. And she still has blood on her. I mean, don't they clean her up in the hospital?
Well, her neck is still covered in his blood.
Yeah, the hell.
Well, yeah, because later when they go home. But yeah, we'll get to that. Go ahead. Yeah.
And the questioner and Lieutenant or Detective Bonnie is kind of going after her.
Yeah, it's kind
of. But everyone else in the room is all, oh, poor Amy. You know, be nice to her, leave her alone.
I know. I don't know how realistic that is. I don't know how sympathetic of a character she really would be in real life.
Right. But, well, she portrayed it well enough.
That... Yeah, but they really showed the men. I thought it was kind of... A lot of this movie was could be seen as sexist against women, showing women this way. But then I think it shows the male detectives as kind of saps, like, oh, they're going to fall for anything that a pretty little woman says, which I don't think is true either.
Right.
Yeah. But they're acting like Detective Boney's picking on Amy just because she wants some facts.
Right.
Yeah. What does she ask her? She asks her questions about...
I don't remember off the top of my head, but they were pointed questions that weren't really answerable.
Yes. She just kind of... Amy just kind of turned it around on her, saying that she was incompetent.
Yeah.
And that she might have been found sooner if she hadn't been focusing on her husband as the killer.
Yep.
Yeah. So she does go back home with Nick, and like you said, she's still covered in blood. So she makes Nick get naked so that she knows he has no wires or bugs on him.
Mm-hmm.
And she's in the shower just covered in blood head to toe.
Yeah.
And she has him come in so she can tell him, talk to him in the shower when nobody can hear it or record it.
Right. So he has no bugs planted on him, and they're in the shower with the water running, so if there's bugs in the room, they can't hear anything.
Right. And she pretty much tells him the truth at that point, right?
Yep.
And he says, you murdered somebody, and she doesn't seem concerned about that at all. But she tells him the Nick she saw on TV in that interview is the Nick that she wants, and that's who she wants him to be.
That's what I want.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Nick says, I'm leaving.
Right.
I'm going to expose you. You know, I'm out of here. But now why doesn't he leave right away?
I think he's afraid that she can harm him.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought maybe he was a little afraid that he would look bad for leaving her after she's been through this.
He certainly would, but I think he's realized how crazed she is.
Yeah, right.
And he's fearing for his own safety.
Right. Yeah, she is pretty scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So they're together. They do interviews and stuff, and they're together for a little while longer. And then eventually she reveals to Nick that she's pregnant. So we figure out that she's artificially inseminated herself, because when they first come to Missouri, he wanted to have kids.
And she didn't.
And she didn't, but she presented it to everyone that she did and he didn't.
Right.
To make him look like the bastard, mm-hmm. right? So it turns out that he had some sperm at a fertility clinic that was going to be discarded, but she went and picked it up. So she artificially inseminated herself with Nick's sperm that was in storage at the local fertility clinic, which he thought it had been wasted, I guess.
Right.
So that's pretty crazy.
For sure.
And he really wants to leave, but then he's feeling responsible for the child. Maybe he would be afraid to leave his child with her, right? Because to get back at him, she might do something to the child.
No
she's
kidding.
She's not beyond that.
Nope.
So, he's kind of stuck there.
Poor Nick.
Yeah. And Margot is very upset, and she objects that she doesn't want him staying with that psychopath.
Right.
But he says he needs to stay with her because of the child.
And that's what he says.
Yeah.
He doesn't mean it.
What do you mean?
Well, he doesn't want to stay with her.
No, but he says he has to because of the child, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, then they do an interview together, where they kind of act like the happy couple.
Right.
And they announce
the pregnancy.
Announce the pregnancy.
Ah.
So that's the end. So if they wanted to have a sequel, I don't know, it would have to be a whole new story involving the same people, I guess.
Right.
It could be that they have a child or that she doesn't have a child. I don't know. It could go many ways, I guess.
Well, I mean, if you want to be real formulaic,
yeah,
as movie people like to do,
sure.
She could have the child and the child disappears.
Oh, you're so good. It'd be like Gone Baby Gone.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but that's, again, I don't like sequels.
No, but that could be interesting now that you say that. I like that idea.
Well,
it could be a missing child case.
It could.
That she makes happen.
Right.
But I don't know where she'd hide the child.
Well, that's for the writers to figure out. I haven't gotten that far yet.
Yeah, and maybe they won't because it's 2016 and they haven't. But it's only been 2 years, so they could.
Well, they could, but we haven't read anything other than the people saying they would do a sequel if there was going to be one.
Yeah.
But nobody said, let's do a sequel.
No. Now, prior to this movie, I'd never seen Rosamund Pike in a movie before. What else has she been in, do you know? Have you seen her in anything?
Isn't she British?
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know what else she's been in.
I think she's an English actress.
Okay.
And she's been in some films before. She's been in Jack Reacher.
Oh, okay.
The Tom Cruise movie. She's been in a James Bond movie, Die Another Day. She's been in Pride and Prejudice. And that's...
Pride and Prejudice, not Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
No, Pride and Prejudice.
Okay.
I think there's some others that I can't recall off the top of my head, but she's been around. It's not like she's just appeared.
Yeah, I just wasn't familiar with her, really.
Pride and Prejudice is, 10 or so years old, so.
Oh, okay. So it's been a while.
It's been a while.
Mm-hmm. So some critics' opinions on the movie. Joshua Rothman wrote in The New Yorker that he enjoyed the film in all its abstract, intellectual, postmodern glory, and that, similar to other postmodern narratives, the film adaptation is decisively unreal. So the heroes and the villains aren't people, but stories, which I kind of see that. There is a lot of...
No question.
Yeah. And then, I mentioned a little bit about the gender themes of this, about sexism.
Right. Misogyny.
Yes, exactly. So in a 2013 interview with Time Out writer Navid Parsi, who described the ending of the novel as polarizing, Flynn explained that she wanted the Gone Girl novel to counter the notion that women are naturally good and to show that women are just as violently minded as men are. I don't know about that, are they? I mean, there are so many more violent crimes by men than women.
Yeah, that's a tough one, because I think if you agree with that, then you're sounding sexist also. But I agree with that.
I don't think women are as violent.
No, I don't think so either.
No. But in a November 2014 interview, Flynn admitted that the critical gender-related response did affect her. She said, I had about 24 hours where I hovered under my covers and I was like, I killed feminism. Why did I do that?
I don't think she killed feminism.
No. But there was a lot of sexist things there about women.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, just her behavior, like, what was I reading in Ms. Magazine? Natalie Wilson argued that by not addressing Amy's social privilege, whereby she possesses the funds, the skills, the know-how, and the spare time to stage a disappearance, that Gone Girl is the crystallization of 1,000 misogynist myths and fears about female behavior. And I kind of agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I would also say the spare time, a lot of that was because she didn't have a job. She was probably undergoing depression and things that gave her the spare time that she used in this very negative way.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. So it's interesting, I guess. There was also an article that I read. It was called Gone Girl's Biggest Villain is Marriage Itself. So it was by Jessica Cohen, and she wrote, Movie Amy pales in comparison to the vivid character we meet in the book. Strip away book Amy's complexities, and you're left with a little more than a crazy fucking bitch. That makes her no less captivating, but it does make the film feel a lot more misogynistic than the novel. Now, I'm not sure about that.
Yeah.
I kind of felt like the movie character was very similar to the book character. A lot of things were left out, you know, in the interest of time.
Sure. But I think I finished the book thinking she's a crazy woman.
Well, yeah, there's no other way. People that go around murdering people are crazy, whether they're men or women, I'd say. And then Time's Eliana Doctorman, she wrote that Gone Girl is both a sexist portrayal of a crazy woman and a feminist manifesto, and that this duality makes the film interesting.
Oh, please.
Now, the problem with Amy is not that she acts in vicious and reprehensible ways, or even that her behavior lends credence to certain misogynist fantasies. The problem is that she isn't really a character, but rather an animation of a not very interesting idea about the female capacity for nastiness. I don't agree with that at all.
Well, that just is an overanalyzation.
You think so?
Oh, God. Yeah.
I mean, I can see...
You know,
I can see Amy,
it's a book and a movie to entertain people.
Right, right. It's not a thesis paper.
No.
No. And I can see them both as characters. Of course, they're not your general everyday characters. They're definitely over-animated for... But
then we wouldn't have a book and a movie.
It wouldn't be so interesting, right? Right. But I really don't see it that way. I see that Amy could be a character, could be a woman. I think that the fact that she's so attractive and so smart, it kind of lends less credence to it for me. I'd like to see a more real-world woman do this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's Hollywood, so...
Right.
Yeah. So that's what happens.
We got to keep up the image.
That's right. Yeah. So anyway, I thought it was a great movie. I enjoyed it a lot.
I did too.
I can't say that it was a great comment on society. I think it was an entertaining movie.
Well, that's what I said.
Right.
It's meant to entertain.
Absolutely.
Not to teach or instruct.
Right. But that said, we are going to do some comparisons as we go into our Killer Husband series.
We are.
And we're going to deal with some men who really did kill their wives. And kind of, we probably will go back to this movie a little bit, talking about their behaviors and things that happen.
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, I think when we're talking about these husbands that did the killings, there's a lot of similarities between them and how Nick is portrayed in the movie.
Sure. And I think that when the character Amy was deciding the things to do, she was basing it on real-life stories of what men have done when they do kill their wives to make Nick look like he killed his wife.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's pretty cool.
So we'll be doing those.
Yep. So we're going to be doing Scott Peterson in a few days, and then I think we'll do Charles Stewart, and then we'll do Drew Peterson.
That's good. I think it'd be too tough for me to do back-to-back Petersons.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is what's up with the Petersons? We did Michael Peterson. Although I think he didn't do it.
Right.
But there's Michael Peterson, there's Drew Peterson, there's Scott Peterson. I mean, ladies, be careful. If you're going to marry a Peterson, watch your step.
Check his past out pretty carefully.
Yeah, be careful about that. Proceed with caution.
Right.
In the Peterson realm. So that's it. We'll talk to you in a few days with Scott Peterson. And I know this story's been done a lot. I was hesitant to even do Scott Peterson. But check back with us, because we really have some updated information on appeals and things going on. There was actually a documentary came out in April. I don't think it's been fully released yet, but it was released at a film festival. A Scott Peterson documentary, which says he didn't get a fair trial. And there are many people that believe he didn't do it. So that adds a whole new aspect to the Scott Peterson discussion. And I'm actually looking forward to it now that I've found out more.
Well, we're ready.
I was afraid we'd be just rehashing, but we're absolutely not. We've got new stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. So thanks for checking in with our On True Crime movie, and we'll see you soon with the next True Crime, Scott Peterson.
Till then.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.